Welcome to Living Villa Capelli, where we learn life is so much sweeter when you add a little Italian to it. And now your hosts, Paul Capelli and Stephen Crutchfield.
Hi again, this is Paul.
And this is Stephen.
And we're talking to you live from Villa Capelli. By the time you hear it, it won't be live, but it's okay. We're live right now. We're in southern Italy, in the region of Italy called Puglia, near the city of Bari. Puglia, as many of you may know, has been getting a lot of press in the past few years. It's quite the destination in Italy. Tuscany is so like yesterday.
Well, the people call the next Tuscany, do they not?
Yes, but I wrote an ad for the region of Puglia, which actually said, many people say that Puglia is the new Tuscany. Actually, we like to refer to it as the old Tuscany.
That's true.
Yeah.
And why would you say that, though?
Well, because when people come, I mean, the people that usually come to visit us or stay with us here at the villa, they're pretty much people who love Italy and have been to Italy many times. But like most people, you come to Italy even for the first five or six times, you do Rome, Venice, Florence, maybe Naples, Milan, maybe if you're on business. You travel around Tuscany, and that's pretty much it. So not a lot of people have ever come down to Puglia because we're way down in the south. Some people would call it backwards, which you could describe it that way. But we actually think of it as sort of coming to Italy and enjoying and seeing Italy the way it was, I don't know, 100 years ago. I mean, we still have horses and carriages that ride by our house every day.
And the dogs don't like them.
The dogs don't like them at all, the horses.
They hate them.
Yes. And we do have three dogs, and right now we're up to 15 cats. And two piggies. We do have two little piggies. Oh. We'll talk about which two piggies are going to go to the market. But being down here in Puglia is quite different from being in the northern parts of Italy. It has a lot of pluses, and it has quite a bit of minuses as well. But hopefully it's changing for the better. Hopefully a lot of the minuses will be going away.
The word I always use when I describe it to people is authentic. It doesn't feel like you're in a tourist trap by any means.
Well, it doesn't feel like you're in a tourist town.
There's no tourist.
When people come and visit us, they say, do a lot of tourists come here? And I tell them, no, you're it. You're the tourist. And everyone looks at you. They look at all little kids, guys, come running up to people and say, hey, you American? You American? It's like a World War II is still here.
What accent? That was like a Japanese accent.
I know, sorry.
Italian.
So these little Japanese kids came up to people and say, you American? You American?
Or they
actually do say in Italian, Sei americano. Which is kind of cute because people here don't see many tourists. They don't see any tourists unless we bring them, basically.
Yes. And we've had guests here that said they've gone to quote unquote the tourist towns in the area and they've never seen another tourist the entire stay they've been here.
Yeah, I mean there were beautiful places here that
amazing.
Fortunately they're not trampled by a lot of tourists, but unfortunately. That doesn't help the local economy much by not having people come here. I mean, we're only 7 miles from the Adriatic Sea, this beautiful, gorgeous, amazing little town near us called Giovinazzo is just a jewel sitting right on the Adriatic Sea, medieval town. And you go there, winter, spring, summer, or fall. Is that a song? Then there's like nobody there. There's just the locals. The only tourists that come are from maybe the next town over. It's just weird. There's so much history here. This is, just filled with. This used to be part of Greater Greece before the Romans came. Then it was part of the Roman Empire. Then it became part of the Byzantine Empire, and then all the invasions that started. This area, believe it or not, is filled with redheads and blondes.
It's true.
Thanks to the Norman invasions, which in fact, just up the street from us, like 600 yards away, is this amazing little church from 1055. It's a Norman church that if this church was anywhere in France or Spain or any place else that has their shit together about tourism, this place would have, you know, buses lined up to visit it. Instead, mm-hmm. it's like nobody's there. We just crawl under the fence to get in and do whatever, you know, take pictures, whatever we want to do. But the whole area is like that. It's, you know, we have a the house here is, you know, presumably from around the 1100s, 1200s. That's when it was started. Finished in about the 1700s, end of the 1700s. But there's also a cave that we have under the garden that the Sovrintendenza delle Belle Arti, which is like the government cultural institute, has come in and, you know, they checked it out, they measured it, they took samples, all this stuff, and they believe that this cave under our garden dates back to 4,000 years ago, 2000 BC, which is the Bronze Age, you know, the time of Stonehenge, basically. But people just don't get it. I mean,
wait. You're leaving out the most important part of the cave.
The cave is in the shape of a penis.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, a penis. It has two balls and a long shaft.
And the best part was all the historians would come and, or I guess, quote-unquote historians in the area, and if we first look at the house, and Paul would ask them, well, why is it in this shape? And they're like, well, what shape? What are you talking about? You know, it's in the shape of a penis. No. It was used to store cheese.
Yeah, head cheese.
Exactly.
No, but, and of course they say, you know, but that's all you ever think about. It's like, no, it's not all I ever think about. The thing is in the shape of a penis.
I mean, it's no mistaking it.
Which I also tell them, ironically enough, or coincidentally, or maybe no one ever thought of it, like when you stand at the base of the shaft where the two testicles are,
yeah,
it looks like a penis.
Yeah.
When you walk into the cave and you stand at the head of the penis and look back towards the testicles, it is basically the shape of a cathedral. So is that really where it came from? I know we talk about the cross and all that stuff, but it looks like, you know, two apses.
Is that really where the shape of it came from, the cathedral, though? Like the
from the penis?
No. Oh. I always think it's more of, I always thought it's obviously the reverse of the penis is the woman's.
Okay, you can say it.
No.
What does that have to do with the cathedral?
No. I'm saying the reverse, if you go to the other side, it doesn't just look like a cathedral. It also, the reverse of a penis is a vagina.
So maybe to you.
It is. There's a shaft with two the ovaries.
Well, yeah, but it's not actually a shaft, Stephen. Come on.
Not a shaft, but there's a...
All right.
Okay, yes. Okay, so... But then I'm saying...
Stephen flunked anatomy.
No. If you look...
Where the fallopian tubes are?
Yes. Whatever they're called. I'm not getting into that. But I'm saying the reverse would be a uterus, a woman's uterus.
I think,
right?
The fallopian tubes are something from Star Trek.
Whatever.
The people of Fallopia.
No, but you know what I'm saying. No, the reverse, so I'm saying, would the church have anything to do with...
No.
Like, they wouldn't obviously
no.
would not have.
No.
Because they wouldn't want women. So they wouldn't want...
No, it has to do with the cross. Hello.
Oh.
Hello. Yeah. Like, what kind of Christian are you? Anyway, so this cave goes back to about 4,000 years ago, 2000 BC. 2 years ago, we helped archaeologists, actually thanks to my assistants, they discovered just not even 100 yards up from the house, maybe 50 yards up from the house, a tomb with two skeletons in it that also dated back to the Bronze Age. And the whole field next to the villa here is believed to be a Bronze Age settlement. But, you know, one of the many problems with Italy is that they have so much stuff underground here that, you know, anywhere you dig, you're going to find some kind of a relic. So they never have enough money to do all these digs and to find out what's really under there. That's one of the problems. The other problem is that if you go and find something underground, it belongs to the Italian government. You're not allowed to keep it. You have to declare it. If you keep it and they find it, you can get fined, you go to jail, all this other stuff. Although in Italy, nobody goes to jail for anything.
But even today, I mean, this isn't quite the same thing, but they were doing the construction on the restaurant and the contractor found a fossil in one of the rocks they removed, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's a perfect,
it's
like,
beautiful.
Shell of a, yeah. like a, conchiglia, in French would be coquillan jacques, a scallop shell. Yeah. But you know, that shell from the tufa stone, it's called tufa, it's sort of like the sandstone that is all in this area. I know it sounds like I'm making this stuff up, but I'm not. That's like 10 million years ago when all this was sea or ocean or whatever the hell it was. But you know, all these things are embedded in the ground all around us. You know, I sat in my kitchen one night here. I may have been stoned. I don't know. I was certainly drunk. I'm not drunk now, but I am drinking a nice martini with our own pickled onions. You know, pearl onions.
Oh, you didn't do the olives this time?
No, I did the onions.
Because we have our own olives and our own caper berries. So we.
That's right.
Oh, and every once in a while, pepper.
That's right, hot peppers.
We haven't done the hot peppers in a while, but that's our martinis.
I was standing in the kitchen, just staring at one of the walls that are made of tufa in this ancient kitchen that we have with this ancient oven, and I was staring at the walls and just looking at all the fossils. I mean, it's just covered in fossils from under the sea, shells everywhere. It's the weirdest thing.
Well, so why don't you go take a step back and tell the people a little story of like why are you here?
We're getting existential.
Yes. Why Puglia? Why? How did you find the villa? That whole good stuff.
Let's see. Well, my mother comes from this town. The town that we live in is actually called Terlizzi. Terlizzi. Terlizzi, province of Bari, region of Puglia, country of Italy. So my mother comes from this town, and I think from what I can tell so far, our family's been here since roughly the 1500s. I'm not from here. I'm from Pisa. I was born up north. My dad was from Pisa. My dad died when I was 2 years old. My mother is still alive and well and living in Jupiter, Florida. She's in Florida, and she refused to come back to this town. But that's another story. So I decided, 12 years ago, to bring my three kids to their grandmother's hometown, because we had been to Tuscany a few times, because I never liked coming down here when I was a kid. It just drove me crazy. I couldn't stand it. I liked being in Tuscany and Pisa. So I took my kids down here to see their grandmother's town, and we went to see one of my grandfather's properties, one of his olive groves, near the house here. And on the way back along the Appian Way, we're driving along this dirt, bumpy road called the Appian Way from 115 AD. And we see this basically shell of this enormous house just sitting there on the side of the road, abandoned. No windows, no doors, but there was a big front metal gate, but the gate was open. So we said, hey, let's go take a look. Now, at the same time, like the year before, I had found a house in Tuscany that I had fallen in love with, but it was much bigger than this and like cost 10 times more. So anyway, we walk into the gate and there is a beautiful courtyard, but you know, with grass up to your nipples. When you could see through it, you could see hypodermic needles on the ground and stuff. We just started wandering around and looking around. It just got more and more beautiful, these big stone arches. My son, who, I don't know, he was probably 6 years old then. No, probably more than that. Anyway, eight or nine.
Yeah.
He says, Dad, it's a castle. You got to buy it. So lo and behold, a year later, I called my cousin. She found out who the owner was, and we ended up buying it. Now, the interesting thing about the cousin, though, that I called, is that the way, if you really go back to the genesis of how this house and how our lives came to be here, it was all because of, drum roll, please, 9/11. So on September 11th, 2001, I'm sitting in my apartment in Manhattan, Chelsea, where else? London Terrace, and
such a cliche.
I turn on the news, the Today Show, of course, and there they are talking about this, the World Trade Center being with smoke coming out, and that whole story. So a few hours later, I get a phone call when the phones started working. Phones were working, cell phones weren't, if you remember correctly. And I got a phone call from my cousin here in Terlizzi, my cousin Patty. And she was just calling to make sure that I was okay. Obviously, they had heard the news all over the world. And
how did she get the number? I'm just curious.
She called my mother.
Okay.
So she calls me to make sure I'm okay. And that's how we reunited after I don't know how many years of not seeing each other. And that was sort of the catalyst for me to come and take my kids here to introduce them to my mother's side of the family. So we end up buying this magnificent villa on the Appian Way with this amazing view. And and then when I was told that the address actually was 11 Appian Way, I said, okay, this is this has to be the house that I'm going to buy. And I remember when I was a little kid coming to this town with my mother and going up to my grandfather's one of my grandfather's fields, and my mom telling me that this was the Appian Way and the Roman legions used to come by here. Maybe I was already gay back then, I don't know. But and I remember thinking, oh my God, a Roman legion probably pisses on the same tree I'm pissing on right now. So I had to have the house.
I actually remember the phone call at work too. He calls me randomly in the afternoon. Okay, we own a villa. And I was like, okay. I just remember hanging up and turning to my partner at work and being like, I own a villa in Italy. It was just like, oh, that happened fast. Yeah. It was... Well, no, I mean, Paul was, like you said, he was looking in a little bit in Tuscany somewhat, but this kind of just, it all fell into place so quickly and so magically.
But also flawlessly. I mean, yeah. a lot of people think that, they hear all these horror stories about doing businesses in Italy and that you can't buy a house if you're not an Italian citizen. And it's really difficult in the bureaucracy. I mean, there is a lot of bureaucracy, but it was very easy.
Isn't it easier to own a property than it is to own a car?
Yeah. I mean, you can buy a house in Italy with no problem whatsoever as long as you have the money, but you can't buy a car. You can only buy a car in Italy if you are an Italian resident. You have to be a resident, a legal resident of Italy to buy a car here. It's like ridiculous. I guess they think it's a lethal weapon or something.
I don't get that either. I don't understand that. Yeah.
But, you don't have to be a citizen to buy here, a house at least. You don't have to be a citizen to buy a car. You just have to be a resident. But you don't have to be a resident because it's sort of a catch-22, isn't it? Because how could you be a resident if you don't have a house to live in?
Wait, no, I'm going to go back again. That makes my head hurt. I've had a martini.
All right. So it's very...
You don't have to be a resident to own land.
No, you don't. Okay. You have to be a resident to own a car. And everything here is done by this sort of medieval way of doing things. Like it's a medieval guild in Italy. You'd only use lawyers to buy property or to do almost any legal transaction. You use a notary. So in the States, we use notary just to, confirm our signature, and it costs you $1.50. Here, whatever you do costs you a few thousand euro because the notary has to handwrite everything and read it. It's just such a pain in the ass. But it really is based on a medieval guild system. And most of the notaries are only notaries because their fathers and their grandfathers and their great-grandfathers were notaries. So you can't get in. It's like a bad union. And drugstores are the same way.
But Nick, I don't know. It's kind of cool that it's kind of guilt. I don't know. Something like passing it down to generation to generation.
It's not the same thing. It's a guild. It's not Gilda Radner. It's different. It's not funny.
Well, I know it's not funny, but it's interesting in the sense of I imagine it had to do with passing it down from generation to generation. No?
No, it had to do with keeping other people out of the business.
That's true.
So you didn't have competition.
Okay, gotcha.
But everything's done through a notary here. So, once you get all that done, it's fine. Taxes on farmhouses are actually very low. They were even lower before, but then of course, you know, Italy is in the shit tube, just like Greece is, and hopefully they're getting out of it. So they just keep raising taxes. The political system here is a shambles. It's probably more corrupt than the United States. They have like they have what they call blue cars here, which are the cars that politicians and dignitaries get driven around in whenever they want. So the United States has these, you know, town cars, basically, right, that the government uses. I think the United States has something like 50 or 60,000 of them. And we have a population of 300, 365 million, roughly, in the U.S. Italy has a population of roughly 60 or 65 million. So the U.S. has 50 or 60,000 town cars, you know, at the disposal of politicians. Italy has something like 300,000. It's like ridiculous. But the other side of the coin is, so you have all these people who are chauffeurs for these cars. So if you get rid of all those cars, then you get another 300,000 people on unemployment. So it's a catch-22. But
sorry, I'm eating my olives. I'm sorry. Steven. It's so unprofessional.
Jesus Christ, Steven. Don't
talk. It's all right. I took my olives and you stopped talking.
I
would say that on that, it's not as hard to buy here. If you're interested, we can hook you up. We know some properties available, but to purchase something here, I mean, we found that out. It's really not that difficult. I mean, the issues probably are a little bit more of like, are you available to oversee anything you want to get done as far as construction, which, you know, Paul was actually flying back and forth all the time to oversee stuff, which, you know, is a necessity. But Puglia is definitely the up-and-coming, especially for any of you in the United Kingdom. It became very popular with a lot of British folks. I know Helen Mirren has a house here. Isn't it Natalie Portman that also has a house
Natalie
here?
Natalie Portman also has a house here, yes.
Justin Timberlake and what's his wife's name?
I don't know. He's the cute one, so it doesn't matter. Really,
yeah,
matter.
What's her name? Shoot.
But,
Jessica Biel. Ha, ha, ha. They just did their wedding here, so it's definitely getting...
And they just had some Indian royalties. I just had a $50 million wedding here. They had elephants brought into this freaking place.
How come
place?
We didn't get involved with that, man?
I don't know.
We could have gotten out. I'll take 1% of that.
Yeah, but I'm not that big into curry. Steven likes curry.
I love my curry. No, because that's one thing I miss. We'll get into another episode of here in Italy. The only restaurants are Italian food restaurants. They do not believe, at least down here, in having any kind of ethnic restaurant. So,
hey, wait a minute. Italy's ethnic.
To America. Well, is it?
No,
it's not.
No, I'll say one thing.
Yeah.
When people ask me, "What do I miss New York?" Yeah. First of all, no.
No.
But there are two things I miss about New York: Chinese food.
Yes.
Oh. And bagels.
Yes. So both ethnic foods. Thank you.
Right. Yeah. So
and some Indian and some Vietnamese. And some sushi.
I don't miss that stuff. No. Steven has been really great at making sushi. He's pretty much got it down. So that's great. My daughter Casey, who's living with us now for over a year and a half, just started making bagels, homemade bagels.
Oh, they were good.
They are the bomb.
They were really good.
So the only thing we need now is Chinese food. So if any of our Chinese friends out there, we did invite one of our Eugene Jin. Because he's always posting pictures of him and his mother on Facebook, and when she comes to town and they go for Chinese food, and I always tell him, you can come, but only if you bring your mother.
Oh, I know that. I haven't seen this post. Oh. Yeah.
Yes, we need Chinese food. Can someone send us some Chinese food, please?
No, that would be so good. Well, the hard part is getting the ingredients, too. There's very little as far as the any kind of those ethnic ingredients here too.
Yeah, but we have big supermarkets like Auchan that you can buy. They have like, you know, a weird food department that they think is weird food. Because, you know, Italians think that their food is the best food in the world.
Yes.
It's like, to them, it's the only food in the world.
Yes.
And granted, Italian food is great and we love it, but it's mostly because it's very basic. It's very peasant, as we like to call it down here. And, you know, so the Italians, when I get on the case, you know, Italian food is the best in the world. It's like, you know, lighten up, because, you know, you're not the only place in the world that has good food. A lot of places have great food, except that, you know, Italian food is more, it just seems to be everywhere. Like, even in the States now, you know, there used to be a lot of French restaurants. You can't even find a French restaurant. They're all Italian restaurants. And my belief is that a big part of the reason why Italian restaurants are so popular is because Italian food costs nothing to make. I mean, what does a bag of pasta cost you? What, you know, how hard is it to make a sauce? So, you know, a restaurant which is looking at their P&L all the time, they're wondering about how they're going to make money. So they make a bowl of pasta which costs them 10 cents and they sell it to you for $10. So that's a pretty good way of, you know, making money. And when someone says, what kind of restaurant should we open up? Hey, how about Italian? Although Mexican might be cheap, too.
I miss Mexican food. Oh,
Steven, you miss
Texas.
Everything.
Oh, from Texas. I miss my Tex-Mex.
He missed from Texas, so yes. Like, ugh, please.
No, barbecue.
He did not vote for George Bush, though.
No, not a million years. Why don't we discuss, though? I mean, we're still the place, basically, guys. I mean, we'll obviously, you can probably find pictures, and I'll post some pictures as we go along of the place. But you should know the place when we found it was a dump, as Paul's mother said. What was her exact words?
Yeah, tutto scufuit. That's a local dialect for it's a wreck.
Yeah, it was a wreck. It really was. I keep freaking getting. When guests come, you know, they'll ask, how much did you do? I'm like, oh, well, this was okay. You know, there were some pillars in the garden that had the rose bushes growing up on them. I said, no, the pillars were fine. And Paul corrected me, like, no, we had to take those down and rebuild them.
Steven didn't even know. Totally. Steven is so alert.
I just blocked it out of my memory because I didn't want to think about how much we had to do here. So this was definitely a under the Tuscan sun, quote-unquote, project, in the sense of it was a ruin of ruins.
One of the shittiest movies ever, by the way.
Oh, horrible. Ugh. But you know that you're the Diane Keaton, and I'm the hot boyfriend, right?
Yeah, whatever.
Didn't you have a hot boyfriend? I don't even remember in the movie.
Yeah, it was, what's his name?
Oh, really? There was actually somebody famous?
Well, he's famous now.
Oh, yeah. An Italian?
Yeah, Italian guy. I can't remember his name. But he was pretty hot back then. Now he's kind of a jerk.
Oh. Is he the one that we're going to cast in the movie here?
No.
Oh, there was...
No, there was someone else.
But anyway...
Oh, Raul Bova, which sounds more Spanish than Italian, but I believe it's Italian.
Anyway, so this is definitely a labor of love. I'll have to post some before pictures, and I'm trying to do, desperately, one of my spring projects is to do a before and after photo, so you see directly the transition that the villa underwent. But, I mean... It was crazy. We came here. The first time I ever saw the villa, we came here with our friends Clark and Greg, and making our ways around, you know, through the various locations, up broken staircases, jumping as much as you can to get up the stairs.
The reason we have broken staircases, by the way, is, you know, that's one of the things that happens around here, just like it happens anywhere in the world, actually. I mean, you know, you go to the Hamptons and you leave your house unattended for a few months and someone's going to break in. So here, where it's a little bit easier because we're out in the middle of the country, people break into these old ancient homes, and the first thing that they steal, rocks. They steal your stone steps. They steal your stone pavements. They steal your stone floors.
Stone drains.
They're
beautiful.
I mean, they're worth a bundle of money, but that's the first thing that goes. Yeah. So we had no steps because they stole them.
And hardly any tiles. We do have a couple of rooms, maybe two, that have original tiles in them.
Yeah.
The main room and then Pompeii, I think.
Yeah.
And then, but basically, my friends Clark and Greg, we made our way up finally to the attic, the top floor. Went up, and there was, of course, the roof was broken. There was all the tiles were broken, so there was a couple holes here. So our friend Clark decided to.
You have to know the Clark. By the way, I hope this is just believed. Clark is black. He's the hottest black guy you'll ever meet in your life. He's black.
Yeah, but he sticks his head through the hole. to look out the view. At the same time, all of a sudden he sees this fox, and there's a fox out here. So the fox sees his head sticking out of the roof and runs through another hole. So then he's running around the attic, and Greg and I are
screaming like a big girl.
Yes. We're like, don't come down, don't come down. So his head is sticking out because he doesn't know whether he should come down or stay there. Like, no, stay there because we don't know where the fox is going to go. So there's a little black head sticking up out of the roof of this ancient villa looking over the view, but there's a fox running around about to bite his nose off. It was great, but it was a freaking wreck. There was nothing here. I mean, looking back, I trusted Paul, but damn, I would have probably had way too much Alka-Seltzer if I knew what we had to go through to get it where we are.
Which
now.
Is why I never asked for Steven's permission. Because
exactly.
He asked for permission. He said, no, you can't do that. Yeah. That's too much money.
Yeah. We did one beach house. We did one beach house together, and I think that was...
No, Steven, hello? What? Hello?
What?
We did two beach houses together.
I know, no, but the second one I just shut up because I was done. I didn't want to do any more. Paul's, how many houses have you done in your life?
I think this is number 7.
And what I'm afraid of is when he's done with the project at the restaurant, he's going to want to do something else.
Yes, let's buy something else.
No.
Like I said, I'm not going to ask. I'm just going to do it.
No. No. What else can we tell folks about this stuff? Anything missing right now? Or
no,
do call
I mean, we'll be posting some pictures, and you know, now we're in the middle of winter, so winter here lasts for roughly a month and a half. It'll freeze for a couple hours, maybe an hour, one night a week.
The worst part about winter is that our kitchen is detached from our room. We have a small little bedroom apartment on the premises, and the kitchen is the kitchen for the whole house. So it's like
20 yards away. You have to go through the courtyard.
You have to go
in
outside.
Your PJs or your long johns.
It's horrible. Oh,
it's not that bad.
No, it's not that bad. But still.
And the kitchen has a wood burning stove, you know, like a pot belly stove.
Yeah, but you have to get bundled up to go outside, just go to the kitchen.
Oh, go back to Texas, would you?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's warmer. No, it's actually colder there lately. All right. Okay. So we'll call that episode?
Yes, we will.
All right.
We'll see you on the next round.
Yes. This was episode 1 for Living Villa Capelli. Thanks for listening. And remember, you can always find all the episodes at livingvillacapelli.com. And please, please, please subscribe. Rate us on iTunes. It definitely, definitely helps us in the end. So thanks so much, guys. And we'll see you next time.
Ciao.